wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Still apart in separate studios across our area, which is not a bad thing because this week we are going to talk gambling, and we have both taken on separate experiences in terms of reaching this point. We are going to talk specifically about sports betting.
Sports betting, yeah. Sports book, as they
sports
say.
Book, as they say in this country, yes. And I will preface this, you're going to have a little bit of fun at home, because like I say, we are recording this show prior to the Super Bowl, the big game. And at the end of this show, we're going to have a little fun, as my partner and I always compete. We're going to place some fun bets at the end of this show. But of course, by the time you hear this show, the Super Bowl will be done and dusted. Well, no, and then the listener at home can decide who the winner is, and then on our next show, we'll see how it all matches up. Because even with the black and whiteness of sports betting, I'm sure I'll find a way to muddy the waters.
Very good.
All right, so let's get rolling. Go ahead, partner.
Okay, so the first thing we were going to talk about is, you know, the background of sports betting. You know, people all are aware there's a lot of sports betting going on in the United States. It has generally not been legal. You always had, you know, the corner bookie, you know, the story of the guy with the little notepad, you know, who would take the bets. And that was a good Seinfeld episode where the guy was trying to be a bookie but didn't have enough money to cover the bets. And
yes.
So, like, Jerry broke his thumbs, not on purpose, but it was nice shtick. But of course, then you have the experience of going to Las Vegas or, Atlantic City didn't have a sports book, but we're going to come back to that. But you go to Las Vegas or the other places out in Nevada, and you could make these sports wagers, which of course isn't real convenient. There is also offshore stuff, but that gets really not, I don't really know people doing that. But my experiences personally were going out to Vegas. There was two major events. Myself and a bunch of friends went out there to the Super Bowl, but they're on a Super Bowl weekend, and a bunch of the like big convention hall type rooms in the casinos, they'll set up like we went to one that was a Budweiser sponsored event and just had TVs everywhere so you could watch the game, and it was like all you could drink Budweiser beer, and you'd go to the sports book beforehand, and like, you know, obviously you can, betting on one game, who's going to win, who's going to lose, that's one thing. But then, of course, you had all of what they call the prop bets, which are these little weird bets of, you know, how many yards is this guy going to get? Who's going to get the first touchdown? And there it even goes to like things like how long is the national anthem going to be?
Right.
Those are not legalized. That's not a sports bet. That's just a bet. But so you had those experiences. And then we also went. It used to be the big popular thing a number of years ago was to go out there during NCAA, like first round, because you had so many games going on over 4 days and you could just be betting on all of these different games and have a rooting interest in all of these first round and second round games. That became so popular in Las Vegas, like the price to go out there, to fly, to stay in the casinos and stuff really kind of shot up. And I think we went 1 year during like conference tournaments or the second round or something like
right.
that. I can't remember. We did another one where it was kind of like that kind of trip with the focus around that.
Well, can I throw, we actually have done some research and there'll be a whole load of links that we're going to throw up on the blog for those of you that want to get super geeky into the history of sports betting. But before, you know, I let my partner continue, I just want to interject with some facts here. And my partner talked about the NCAA. I did some research, and apparently 2 years ago, the last time we had a full tournament, someone had thrown up the numbers that 40 million different people had gambled on the NCAA in some form or another. I would imagine that was primarily
the office pools.
Yeah, I would think primarily that is the office pool. So I was not able to figure out, you know, how, you know, sort of how the gambling was done, but you know, apparently there were revenues of over 8.5 billion for the NCAA tournament. Someone somewhere figured out that at least 150 million different brackets were done. I don't know how they figured that out, but here's an interesting stat I found about the Super Bowl. Was from 2 years ago. 26 million people apparently bet on the Super Bowl. And someone had figured out that the revenue that floated around was $6.8 billion, and $270 million of that was legal. Now, in reading the article, it didn't really sort of endorse how it came to those statistics, but that notion of sports betting, I think, in this country is still in that sort of... it is still crossing the river, so to speak, from being, the, as you said yourself, the neighborhood character, you know, breaking thumbs, and... You know, as we're going to discuss during this show, you know, fully legal part of life sports betting. My own personal perspective, obviously, you know, this being the Atlantic Voice, I grew up in London. And sports betting, the OTB, the bookie, the betting shop is just a part of society in the way that the Starbucks is a storefront on the high street. Well, William Hill, Ladbrokes, Betfred, they all have storefront properties, and you wander in and you place your bets. I did notice when I was home a couple of years ago, everything now is much more electronic inside. You walk in and you walk up to a machine and you do it. But when I was younger, you walked up to the counter.
There was what you wanted.
Yeah, there was a chap on the other side of the counter. There were, you know, there was a daily race card of horse racing across the country. Then when weekends came around, you could bet on everything. And I remember being a little kid and accompanying my father, who I've said before is the man who taught me how to read the horse racing form. He was a big daily gambler on the horse races. But of course, when you're like 9 years of age, you're, the one caveat about the betting shop was it was over 18s only. So I would have to wait outside while he disappeared into the betting shop. And of course, when you're little, you have no concept of time. I felt like I was standing outside for an hour.
I was about to ask you, like, was it like forever? Was he in there for 5 minutes in and out?
It always felt like it was forever. And so I remember, you know, it's like the first time you go to the pub and buy alcohol legally. I still remember the first time I wandered into the betting shop as an adult and placed bets. So it is, while it is fully legal, there is still this notion of, oh, this is an adult activity. But like I say, you know, wandering into your local high street store, betting shop, and betting on stuff is very much a part of British life. And like I say, you mentioned there about prop bets at the Super Bowl. You know, in Britain, you can go in and you can place a bet on who's going to win the general election, or you can go, you know, how many seats will this party bet? The famous bet is always to place, you know, during the month of December, will there be snow somewhere? Will it snow somewhere in the UK on Christmas Day? I think you can wander into the betting shop now and get odds on will alien life be, you know, will aliens land on Earth within the next year? And someone somewhere has odds. So what I'm saying is it's just part of, you just bet on stuff. It's not just a sports thing. It is primarily sports driven, but right. You can bet on, you know, that, you know, daily life involves prop bets,
but it's not, there's no table games. In other words, no cards, no roulette, no things like that.
No, I mean, not within the betting shop. Now, like I say, in Europe, there are you know, betting is legal. So casinos right. are legal, but they are two very different forms of sort of gambling entertainment. And it is interesting, before we move on, I just quickly Wikipedia to see countries where, you know, where betting is legal, and pretty much all over the world, you know, there's only a few countries where that, you know, there's no, where most forms of gambling are outlawed. I'm just going to throw some interesting stats I found off the internet. There are only 7 countries where online gambling is known to be illegal. Cyprus, Poland, North Korea, the United Arab Emirates, Singapore, Brunei, and Cambodia, which those latter countries I find interesting. Because, again, my father is Asian, and gambling is very much part mm-hmm. of the Asian culture. Apparently, in North Korea, only tourists are allowed to gamble, like, for example, like play the lottery. So, for example, in Bhutan, there's no gambling, but there is a weekly lottery drawing that people can sort of still gamble in that very mm-hmm. sort of broad sense. It's growing in Africa. It's very prevalent across South America, and then obviously across Europe, where apparently if there's a top 20 list of sports betting countries, the bulk of them are European, you know, Britain, you know, France, that kind of thing. So it is interesting. I've always found it interesting again, when I came to America, it was almost impossible to place a bet. Like, I remember way, way back in the day, I knew someone who would gamble on college basketball, and he would, you know, he would have his sort of newsletter that he carried with him, and then he would make phone calls in the game, but it was all very sort of illicit, and you know, to your point, you know, someone getting their thumbs broken.
Yeah,
I would actually like to be a bookie. It's the threat of violence that would put me off.
We're flashing ahead a little bit. I mean, the threat of violence, you'd be a bookie, so you'd have to threaten violence. So you're not.
I wouldn't be a very good bookie, because I think I would guess, like, say you came to me and said, "Zeph, I'm going to place a bet with you." And then obviously, you know, if you lost or whatever, you might threaten me with violence. I wouldn't be a very good bookie because I'm not good at, you know.
Yeah.
I'm more worried of having violence, you know, put on me than the other way around.
We're soft.
Yeah, yes.
You know, it's just flashing ahead to stuff we'll talk about later on, but has England, since already had it legalized, have they legalized it as an online thing, or is it still keeping it to the shops? Because that's one way you can control it, is you sort of force people to go somewhere to do it rather than sitting in there on their couch and playing with their phone.
No, I think it is now very much a phone thing. Like, it wasn't a big jump, because again, the gambling culture, it's like I say, there is nothing. I want to be careful how I say this, because there's always sort of like everyone's sort of moral attitude towards gambling, but from a completely legal sense, yeah, it's like drinking. But that's not to say there's someone who goes, "Oh, don't drink. It is, you know, it is the liquid of the devil." Well, yeah, there are people in the United Kingdom who are that way about gambling. But in the eyes of the law, going to the betting shop is like going to the pub.
Yeah.
Whereas here, like I say, when I came here, like again, there was this, it was illicit, illegal. It's bad. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's why, you know, I mean, let's face it. I think it's fair to say that Las Vegas especially has existed primarily on this notion that it is some sort of oasis within a whole country of...
It's like some old, like, you know, a number of years ago, they were doing, like, Las Vegas, trying to make it a more wholesome, touristy type of thing.
Right.
So their, you know, their ad agency that, you know, the trade associations or whatever it was for Vegas, or maybe it's the city itself, was advertising, you know, like, "Oh, come here, have fun." And then they realized nobody wants to really just do that. And so that's where you came up with this, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas ad type campaigns, and made it much more like, yeah, we know you're coming here to get in trouble in some fashion, so go ahead and do that. And
What's that? Obviously, you've seen Casino with Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci. What's that great line at the end where he's talking about now Vegas looks like profanity Disneyland? Because it was all about these dudes who are hardcore gamblers who ran casinos, and to your point, it has become something else entirely.
So, but now, why are we talking about this now? Well, that's because there's been a proliferation of sports gambling across the United States on a state-by-state basis. Well, why is that? So a number of years ago, there was a law, I forget when it was passed, but the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act. So I don't really know what the legal regime was at the time. Maybe there just wasn't a lot of interest in the sports book, but this is a federal law, meaning, you know, the U.S. government as a whole passes a law that banned any states from setting up sports betting.
Right.
And it grandfathered in Las Vegas and, I think, you know, like reservation casinos or something like that, but it basically sort of freezed things the way they were. And the state of New Jersey brought the main case that challenged this. It ended up being called Murphy versus NCAA. I don't know why NCAA was a defendant, but in any event, what they were doing is challenging this law at the federal level, saying it's unconstitutional. It actually started off as Christie when it was, was Chris Christie was the governor, and then when they changed governors, they swap in the new name of the governor as plaintiff, and Murphy was the plaintiff when it got to the point of being decided. And so the challenge was to say, and this is, I'm going to really oversimplify things, that under the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, it's the concept of federalism. That is to say, when it comes to interstate events, the states have the authority to, generally speaking, unless the federal government is granted authority expressly under the Constitution, it is not empowered to make laws that really govern the activities inside of a state.
Right.
So this is why.
Intrastate generally as to interstate.
Like, yes. Right. So it's
got
it
your
has
Latin
to tie
confused.
Into some interstate commerce thing.
Yeah.
That's why you, like, for example, like when you commit crime through the post office, it can be a bigger deal because it triggers a bunch of federal laws that will come up. Kidnapping is sort of unique. I think they can still come after Kindemi if it's inside of the state, but because it was so often across state borders, they somehow got the authority over kidnapping cases. But in any event, they challenged this, saying, hey, listen, you can't restrict what we're going to do, you know, locally. And for New Jersey, the focus was Atlantic City. This is why I was referencing Atlantic City. While it had gambling, never had a sports betting, and they wanted to give the casinos there any opportunity to have a sports book in them.
See, I didn't know that. Atlantic City, I presumed it was all one. Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't really been able to keep up with Vegas, and so time to time people will be pushing for this. So they actually won their case pretty resoundingly. I think it was something in the 7-2 decision, or 7-2, and declared the entire law 6-3, meaning at the U.S. Supreme Court, saying no, they're right. this is an interference. But the gist of that is, you can only gamble effectively inside the state.
Yes.
So the gist of it is that, you know, as long as you're crossing state lines, I can't make a wager from here into New Jersey, but I'm in Virginia, I can make a wager inside of Virginia.
Right.
So, and moreover, by the way, it didn't legalize gambling. It left the laws to the states. So 25 states at this point have. There was a big rush to get in on it because Everybody's basically saying, I want to set these things up and be the ones who first to act. You know, Maryland had already set up casinos on their side of the river. Virginia has just recently legalized casinos and will be building them shortly. But, you know, there's some advantage of being what they call the first mover. You know, you set up your casino first and maybe you're going to get all the business, and like the new ones won't be able to compete. So a lot of the states went in there, and obviously the real motivation for these states is the tax revenue. You know, they take a big slice of the gambling that's going on, and how much business can you get? How much can you help the state's coffers?
Well, can I quickly interject with a statistic that I've just discovered, and you're talking there ultimately about, you know, like most things when they, I think it's fair to say that when most things that are illegal become legal, it's because the states see it as a form of revenue. Their end of it. Oh, yeah. So it was interesting. I just typed into the computer, what are there any states that don't have the lottery? And interesting enough, and I was surprised when I saw this, there are 6 states in the U.S. as of January of last year that do not have the lottery. Alabama, Alaska, Hawaii, Mississippi, Nevada, and Utah. Nevada kind of doesn't surprise me because it doesn't. It surprises me in that gambling's legal, but it doesn't surprise me in that they already have a large gambling industry. So
right. Well, they wouldn't have wanted, because when the lotteries came along, they said, right, hold on a second, we got a gambling here. We can't have you undercutting that with people playing the lottery.
But I'm still surprised that there are 5 states that do not, that you can't play the lottery. That surprises me. And not just in the deep South.
Yeah. So now there is another law that has basically people have not confronted fully, called the Wire Act.
Right.
Which says that you can't do this through interstate means. Now, the thing is, when it comes to put it this way, it's very clear that in the wake of the Supreme Court decision, you could set up a casino in the state, or a sports book, I should say, in a state.
Because it's brick and mortar.
To it, you've been right. That's very clearly inside of the state. But when it comes to all the online things we were referencing before, and the you know, doing it on your phone and doing it that way, the truth is, when you deal with the internet, where's it going, right? Like, you know, it used to be, once upon a time, a phone line would be a direct connection to the other end of the phone, you know, the phone. So that could be inside of a state when you made the phone call. But nowadays, even the phone system, but also more importantly, the internet system, is it goes up into the sky, it goes all over the place. Who the heck knows where it really goes? And so there's some arguments that people have occasionally said, it's like, well, you know, technically, this may not be legal the way people are setting up these apps. Basically, everybody's forging ahead with the assumption it's not going to be a big deal.
Well, so maybe we should talk about, you know, before we get into the whole app thing, do you want to talk about that notion in terms of the fact that these apps, phones can be tracked? So at that moment, location is suddenly a lot easier to determine. So what I'm saying is,
somewhat
easier. So I myself downloaded 2 different apps, one to allow me to place a bet in Virginia and another one to allow me to place a bet in the district where I do not live. So obviously, people know where your phone is. So right there, it will kick in and allow you to operate depending where you are. But interestingly enough, on my laptop, For the district, of Columbia betting app, I had to download some special software that would then, I guess, determine where my laptop is if I decide to place a bet using that and not my phone.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead a little bit.
Sorry, but
the topic of this location issue, and we'll come back to the apps themselves, because I ran into similar issues. I downloaded, I'll explain why I didn't, but I signed up for two different services in Virginia. For what it's worth, Virginia's going to roll out. I think they're allowed to have up to a 20 or so, but they've got a dozen in the pipeline or so with FanDuel, DraftKings, BetMGM, BetRivers, William Hill is supposed to start in February. Yep. And then there's some other ones. And those are just the online ones. They're also, like I said, they've approved like four or five locations for actual casinos that will have sports books in them. But so the same thing is that, FanDuel required you to, if you did it on your computer, let's start with the computer first and then I'll explain what happened with the phone. If you do it on the computer, it required you to download this extra plugin to your browser.
Right.
That was a location determining device. Well, I had to like wrestle with my antivirus software to allow it to put it on there, because the antivirus software was saying, well, this thing is to track your location. And yes, it is, because you're wanting to give your location so that you can get approved for the thing. It looks like what happens is once you got set up, I could pull the plugin off, you know, so I had to like shut off the virus software, bring it in there, sign up, and then delete out the add-in. So okay. It's not tracking me on a daily basis. It was just tracking me so I could set up the account and establish that I was local. You do also have to, by the way, put in like parts of your social security number. It does yep. a bunch of things that it's not so much as tracking, but it's using services, or the company's using services to verify you are who you are.
Yes.
You know, for identity theft issues. But then interestingly enough, the other one, I did the BetMGM, which is the one you did in Virginia too, right?
Yep.
It didn't have that. Like it just skipped, you know, it must basically, you know, I'm guessing that there's no fixed legal way that they have to do this. The law probably says you need to verify people are inside the state, and BetMGM presumably says, I got enough information from the browser. I'm not worried. I feel comfortable enough with my conclusion that this person is inside the state that I will go ahead and let them open an account.
Remind me to come back to that when we actually talk about these apps, because I do have some interesting experiences with the MGM website and the MGM app, but we can come back to that.
Okay. And then, the other part is, the phone is obviously the more convenient thing. In fact, a number of these things are offering incentives, but you can't, at least on the Android phone. I don't know. Did you put them on your phone?
Yeah, I have them on my phone. Yeah.
Okay. So on an Android phone, I'm
already losing money through various electronic modes.
The Google Play Store, where you get the apps, does not allow straight gambling apps yet.
Oh.
So like they have like fantasy sports apps. So a lot of these companies got their start in fantasy sports, FanDuel, DraftKings. Fantasy sports things originally. You can still download those. And for whatever reason, Google has said, well, I'm not going to give you the apps. It's not so much going to block you, but I think it just doesn't want to be the endorser of the apps.
I see.
Not verifying them.
See, via the Apple Store was easy.
So what you have to do is you have to sideload what they call sideloading the apps, which is not a prohibited activity on a Google phone or anything. It's just basically saying, well, you know, you want to, it's like you used to do. You just go download a program and you install it. However, on my phone, because I use it for work purposes and for personal purposes, the work part of the phone is essentially siloed off with some software that keeps it secure.
Okay.
So that all, like, even I even have apps that are sort of duplicated in two places. And so, like, when you're in the work world, you're in the work world, and it keeps it secure, and your IT administrators can deal with it. So it prevented, I could download it, but when I went to install it, that kicked up and said, you can't do that.
Oh, interesting.
The reason is because the work part of it is basically keeping your phone secure. It looks at an application it's not because it's gambling. It's just because it's a application that's the way somebody could plant a virus or some sort of malicious hacking software onto your phone, and so it won't let you install that. So I even went so far as I said, you know what the heck? It's legal. I'm just going to go ask our IT people, like, I fully understood probably why this was a problem, but I went to ask him if it was supposed to be a problem. Sometimes the software is a little overly zealous.
Yeah.
So like I emailed in. So I had a little email exchange with our IT person, one of our local people, and then I ended up getting on the phone with them, and we had a good chuckle over the fact that, like, oh, he had done it also, and like gone through the whole thing. He's like, yeah, you can't do it on the side there. So he said, but you can just do it on your computer. I'm like, yeah, I already figured that part out. but I was trying to.
But the fact that you're even going through these steps, for me, as someone who comes from another, who came from another country where betting was an everyday way of life, it keeps reverting back to this notion that this is an illicit, immoral activity that at some level is bad. And even the fact now, and I wanted to ask you, you know, you mentioned that thanks to the Murphy versus NCAA, the Wire Act and all this type of thing, that states were now able to explore online gambling.
Right.
I would have immediately imagined that. That's the thing. There is a part of me that thinks that the minute it became legal, I'm surprised that not all 50 states are powering forward. Now, I'm not suggesting they are. They aren't. But some people are ahead of the game than the others, and that just surprised me, because I think at some level, at a very local issue, you have to come back and convince your voters that this is the right thing to do.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And I just find that interesting.
Or if you're a regular legislator, you're not going to take up the cause of game, even because
right.
of state revenue. You're not going to take it up all on your own. You need to have some momentum behind your populace that says we should do this, right? You know, like the legislators certainly could come up with that, but they don't want to be the trendsetter and be on the wrong
side.
Yeah,
and that's my point. So, it's not quite like a true third rail, but there is still something. Depending where you are, I can imagine that some places like, yeah, we'll get to that later. Do you know what I mean? Because there is still this notion that someone somewhere, and like I say, I have visions of old ladies with their handbags demanding that this is all wrong. Do you know what I mean? The morality police will appear out of the woodwork.
Side note is that Virginia, because we mentioned before in this last election, I think, or even actually going back to the prior election, essentially became an all Democratic state, meaning the governor,
right,
and both houses of the state legislature are Democratic now, is now passing a whole bunch of things. For example, they're about to pass full marijuana legalization in Virginia.
Yes.
And so by 2024, we're supposed to have the shops just like we're Colorado.
Right.
You know?
But
things have cracked open that way.
Yeah, I mean, I must confess, at a very base level, because we are south of the Mason-Dixon line, I was surprised we were so quickly on board with the ability, you know, for bet. You know, the FanDuel and BetMGM.
It's a very business-oriented state, right?
Right.
So
that is part of it.
They were right on top of that stuff. So one interesting. So I forget exactly what the date is, but if gambling was officially legal. Sportsbook gambling again was officially legal starting in April or May of last year of 2020.
Right.
But of course, there wasn't a place to do it, and so they had to do regulations, and people had to bring out their apps and get their apps approved. And oddly enough, it's the Virginia Lottery that is the regulator of all this stuff. Because I guess they said we have some people who understand gambling. We'll have them run it. So these apps have just started coming out. And like I said, there's three of them out and another one's coming out next month, and they're supposed to get to about a dozen. One interesting wrinkle, and I'll come back to the companies, is, when I first signed up, I went on there and I said, I'll just find some token bets to make just to try it out. And I went looking, of course, for my alma mater, University of Virginia. But turns out the Virginia law says you can have the gambling, except you cannot do NCAA betting on any Virginia colleges. So like no Virginia colleges. So if I want to bet on any Virginia games, apparently I'm going to have to go into DC and pick up one of your DC apps and
that is correct.
That part of the wagering. But one of the interesting things, I mean, we probably should have all prefaced this with the disclaimer that we don't want anybody to have a gambling problem. You know, there's all these websites, by the way, have an RG logo in the corner that's all about respond. You click on there and it gives you a bunch of numbers to call if you're having a problem. But they're all running these promotions, right? Because they, you know, same thing as the first mover, right? Like who's going to, other than the people on Atlantic Voice, who's going to download multiple apps, right? Like what's the point? You know, like if you can make all your bets in one place, why would you bother with different apps? And so there's this advantage to these ones who first get there. And so right now with these three out, there's a tremendous number of promotions out there.
Oh yeah.
Incentives to get you to sign up. There's all these things that like if you have just signed up, you get X. Like, and so for example, like they'll match your money that you put in a deposit. It is money that you can't then turn around and take out, but it's money you can wager, and
yes,
the money you win you can take back out. So for example, or like special odds. Like, so I wish I had known about this. I signed up for the FanDuel one early, but like FanDuel right now, if you sign up, we'll offer you 55-1 odds on either team you pick in the Super Bowl.
Oh, interesting.
So in other words, if you wager $5, it's only a maximum bet of $5, but you can get $275 for a $5 bet on either team. Again, I don't know if that money is real money that you get, or it's just you now have $275 in your account that you can make other wagers with, or how that works. We're going to get into a little bit of the usage of the apps.
Well, let me say this is an industry awash in money, because according to the internet, the gambling industry. So I'm guessing this means casinos as well, contributes about $140 billion to the economy here on an annual basis. So this is a big industry. A wash in cash.
Yeah. So we'll come back to the apps in a second. But one of the things I just want to, again, looking at America being new to this and as a cultural piece of it, like I think we're just beginning to see the exposure we're going to have.
It's kind of like
the advertising. That's when people are going to really start noticing, is when, you know, the billboards and I don't think there's any prohibition on TV advertising. So I assume we're going to see the TV advertising. There's certainly radio advertising now, and all these things that's going to be on your internet banners and all this stuff pushing it out to you is going to make, even if you're not going to use the gambling, is going to make the gambling a more current presence. Now, I don't think they're going to do like England, where you've got little shop fronts all over the place. Maybe they are. Maybe they will be allowed to do that, I don't know. But then again, why would you set up a bunch of shops for something that people can buy online? I mean,
yeah, yes, you know. I think that's the reason against it. But it's interesting. It's interesting that with the statement you've just made, and you're talking about now how you know the brand of the business will become ingrained within the business itself. And like I say, in the UK, you know, there's an article that I'll put on the blog. You know, it was talking about British soccer teams, and obviously, you know, many of them, their primary or one of their primary sponsors is a betting company.
And they talked about the movement over the years. Like, you know, 20 years ago, it was all electronics companies. In the years before that, it was different. Now it's like something like a majority of the Premier League and Championship League teams, more Championship League teams like the second division down, have a betting sponsor.
Events,
their primary sponsor.
Events, you know, horse race meets, car races, you know, events now are all sponsored, you know, across the world. For the longest time, these events have been sponsored directly by bookmakers. So in the same way that, you know, that your local golf PGA golf tournament will be the State Farm Insurance Classic, to your point, are we going to get to the moment where it soon becomes the Bet MGM Classic? Because these are people that want to be associated with sports. And I wanted to touch on a point in terms of that. I didn't do enough research on the history of the New Jersey case, but I do find it interesting. The minute when I started looking for betting apps, because of my heritage, I immediately was drawn to William Hill and BetMGM.
Yeah.
Yet, interestingly enough, you first went with FanDuel. Now, what was interesting about those guys was they've been around now for 5 or 6 years. Yeah. And they started life with this sort of notion of, hey, you can pick your fantasy team. And that it was right. Which ultimately is a form of gambling.
The single day, like in other words,
right, yeah,
fantasy administering amongst your buddies. It was like, oh, pick a bunch of things. And so they were trying to finesse
right.
the margin between real gambling and games of skill.
But it's interesting how that is something that has existed up front. And yet we're only now getting to the stage was, hey, bet on the winner. Which in a strange way, if you look at gambling historically, you know, I think my point is, you know, fantasy football or fantasy baseball is almost a form of prop bet. Whereas gambling started life where I think that horse is going to beat that horse type thing.
Well, one of the crazy things is that those apps, they have live in-game betting. I don't know if that's ever been a thing in England.
No, it's a new thing. That is a new thing.
In the midst of the game, you can watch
you know,
the odds go up and down, and whatever moment of the game, you can bet on the winner. You can bet on, like, I don't know, the next free throw, whatever it is. But in fact, that ties it in culturally. The other thing that I think is going to be unique in England, I'd rather America versus England, I shouldn't say unique, but different, is that sports venues are going to become one of the primary places for the gambling outlets. So in DC, for example, the place that was the Green Turtle restaurant that was in the MCI Center.
That's going to be a William Hill.
It's going to be a gambling outlet.
Yeah, it's going to be William Hill have had to sign up for over a year that they were working behind closed doors.
The original talk was that when you were going to bet on your phone, you would have to be in the arena. Like it would tell you.
Oh, interesting.
And then you'd be able to. I think that stuff's gone away. But in Virginia, and Virginia doesn't even have any pro teams, but part of the law says the other place you could put these sports books, in addition to these casinos we're going to license, is at any pro arenas. And part of that, it was a thought, was I think they were setting themselves up to try to get the Redskins to move to Virginia.
Oh, interesting.
So not the Redskins, the Washington football team. The Washington football team to move over to Virginia. And so the thought was, well, if we set this stuff up, sure, nobody's using it now. But the next time somebody's going to relocate a sports team, maybe they'll come here because they'll go like, oh, and we can also set up a casino inside or in a sports book inside of our venue. Which is pretty weird because, of course, the fear always on things was the fear that you saw, like, is that the gambling being in close proximity to the actual athletes would lead the athletes, like, to lead to compromised outcomes that, like, you know, you have the Black Sox scandal where somebody involved in the gambling part, I guess. But what has probably happened is as the gambling has become big corporations and the pro athletes, like, how much are you going to pay them that it's really worth it? They're getting paid so much to begin with that risk is really diminished to next to nothing. Like the idea that William Hill, you know, a global gambling company, is going to try to influence the outcome of the Washington Wizards game is highly unlikely.
Well, it is interesting because, and again, we're now, and I'm going to make a cultural comparison. So obviously, back in England, gambling has been legal for, you know, betting on sports has been legal for many, 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 many years. And there have been instances of so-and-so's in trouble, accused of, you know, fixing this or a player getting involved in something. But in general, there has never been any air of impropriety around the industry. Like, you would never go to the racetrack and have a whole load of people leaving who've lost their money going, this was fixed. It's just interesting. Whereas in this country where gambling has been illegal for so long, where betting has been illegal for so long, there does seem to be a greater history of games being compromised, and the concern of games being compromised is much, much higher. Like, no one sits around and watches, you know, no one sits around and watches tennis in England and thinks, ooh, you know, is Roger Federer taking a dive? Do you know? And I only use that as an example just to use like very familiar names. But that's not to say they've not been. I even think last year apparently there was a lower level darts player who got into trouble because he was accused of throwing his match.
Wouldn't even know, right?
Right.
Like, you know, because that's hard to tell. You know, and of course, keep in mind, like with point spreads and things, you don't actually have to lose in order to influence the gambling. There's the old NCAA case of point shaving that led to the demise of the NIT, or it lead to the whatever it is, like the old tournament that ultimately
became was the NIT
tournament. It used to be somebody else's, and that was because of the fact that there was a point shaving scandal where the college kids were, and particularly them, and that's why, you know, you kind of avoid, have them clear of the gambling because they're not getting paid, but they were getting paid money to not score as much. So like you could be favored by 10 points. If you just win by 8, you've made the come out the way in a favor of gamblers. So by the way, I should point out, you know, it's not only the gambling companies that would want to influence the outcome. It's if you picked a side, right? Like you could put a big wager and things on things and then you'd want to move the needle.
So it is interesting. I'm scouring my mind now for who it was, but I think someone in the last 2 years, you know, like a Premier League footballer got into trouble and got a slap on the wrist from his club because he'd gone to the betting shop and admitted betting on his own team or something. Yeah. Because he was injured and felt like, well, I'm not in the game. So, someone said, hey, yeah, I'm going to put $20 on Arsenal to win type thing. And he went in there and then he got into trouble. But again, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking of the case of, you know, Pete Rose.
Right.
You know, who is still not in the Hall of Fame because he bet on baseball. And to be fair, he was betting when it was an illegal activity.
Right.
So maybe that's slightly different. But there are loads of tales of soccer players who, after training, you know, back in the day, the lifestyle was to go to, they had all afternoon off. So they went and gambled on the horses. And a lot of soccer players from when I was a kid, when they retired, they took their money and invested it in horse racing because that was just another outlet. So it is interesting how that just, my only point is, it's just like sort of the societal attitudes towards the whole thing are just, they're just shaded differently.
Yeah. I did want to mention two things about the soccer piece of it. One is that I can't believe that those ads on somebody's shirt really lead anybody. Like, do the people who follow, you know, so-and-so team go to Dafabet because that's on the shirt? Like, and they mention the fact that, like, of those gambling companies, only a few of them, like certainly a minority, are even in England.
Right.
Like, and it's really obviously because of the international marketing. But am I picking my gambling app based on what? I mean, it's not like, I think of NASCAR and people who are like, they'd be a big fan of a driver. And so they'll use Tide, you know, or they'll use whatever the product is. And
yeah, who's the dude who pushes Domino's pizza? He's his NASCAR right. driver. Like, even if he's my favorite driver, I'm sorry, I'm not eating that pizza. That's yeah, why.
Some people are, but I don't really know that people are going to pick the game. But the other part is, isn't soccer like the worst sport to bet? Like, with low scores.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting killed.
Lack of measurables. Well, there's just not that many things to measure. Like, you know, football, basketball, especially baseball is a mess too, right? Because baseball is like very fluky in the way a particular score will come out. That's why you have so many games, is because it kind of comes out at an average overall. But the sports where, like, you can have a football game and you have so many more.
Yeah, but you know something
I look at the betting, and by the way, so for people who aren't already familiar with it, most people are familiar with the spread bet, which means it's a way to set a point difference between sort of handicapping between any two teams so that roughly you're getting the betting equally on each side.
Right.
So like if I make the spread 7 points, then, you know, half the people bet on one side, half people the other side. They each get paid roughly their amount. But there's a lot more wagering that's done on odds. Everybody's familiar with, like, you know, 5-1 horse racing odds, but that's not really the way most odds are quoted. They're quoted this plus minus system.
No, and this has been the hardest. I feel like I'm learning it all over again.
Yeah. But that's the way the soccer bets are on these websites. So, like, because they say, like, you know, it's what's a spread in a soccer game? You would just make it a half, you know, like, you know, that's.
No, but I have noticed, I do want to say this from, you know, now that I've downloaded these apps, and again, my own personal attitude towards sports betting was very much in the form of a race. Whether it be cars or whether it be horses, like, very simple. Who's finishing first? Who's finishing second? To be fair, in a strange way, though, society has changed where that is not the driver of it anymore. I think those industries might survive now that betting becomes more prevalent. But I think in this country and in modern times, it has always been the sports event. And so I will say
the big thing is people feel better betting on something they feel like they know something. Like, they want to have a feeling that they're right. Whereas horses, there's not that many people follow horse. Like, there's people who are really into horse wagering, follow the horses and their watch. But like, if I just go, I go to the track twice a year or something like that, I don't know what's going on. Like, I might as well just be playing the lottery.
And I think, and I'm going to say this now, I think in a strange way, like sports is the roulette wheel of gambling, in that I can know nothing about roulette, but I can place a bet on red or black. It's a choice A, choice B.
You can, but I think most people get into it because they feel like they know.
But what I'm saying is, it can attract people at a very simple level. You're right. You have to educate yourself to honestly think you've got a chance of picking one out of eight horses to win a race. But it is much easier to turn on the TV and watch Team A against Team B and sit there and go, well, I think Team B is going to win. So what I'm saying is that the entry level of expertise, for want of a better word, is much lower for sports.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get back to the apps.
Yeah.
You know, we talked a bit about the mechanics of getting in there. Just a couple of other differences I thought of afterwards. I don't know if your experience. So maybe because FanDuel has been around in the States longer, in addition to having that extra hurdle of the location, every time you log in, It requires what they call two-factor authentication. So it sends you a text. So you not only sign in with your name and password, but then you have to get a text and put that number in.
Oh, really?
So you are who you are.
Oh, God.
The MGM one doesn't do that. The MGM is just like signing into any old account.
Yep.
Put in your name and password, and here you are. On the other hand, I noticed I had the two pages open. The MGM one signs you out automatically after it seems like 5 or 10 minutes if you're not doing anything, whereas the FanDuel one just seems to leave it open.
Yes.
And so like it's just sitting there. So if you walked away from your computer, somebody could mess around with it kind of thing, whereas that they have different. So, you know, it's not a universal approach on this stuff yet.
As I mentioned,
lots of incentives. It's going to lead into, I've already placed one or two prop bets, but they were based around incentives because they basically said, if you make a prop bet here, like there's some promotion just for the Super Bowl of $10, we'll give you back the $10 if you're wrong.
Yeah.
Again, it's not real money, but it's, you could gamble it more and lose it later kind of thing. So, they feel like they're right there. I have no idea, like, you know, if these odds are good or bad or what they are on it.
Well, before we talk about odds, do we want to, so you talked about your experience registering with FanDuel and mm-hmm. the slightly different experience with MGM. The one thing I would say about MGM, obviously, like anything on the internet, you have to add an email address. I now get a stream of emails telling me that I logged in. So I guess that's their attitude towards
security. Security too.
So I downloaded the BetMGM app, and I originally registered through the website. I don't know if you've had this issue. Every time I try and place a bet on my computer, even sitting at my house, I seem unable to do it via the internet, but I can pick up my phone and do it instantly. I've had this issue with the MGM the BetMGM website, where it says unable to process at this time, but I can immediately pick up my phone, place the same bet on my phone, and it's not a problem.
Well, since I haven't been able to do anything on the phone, I haven't had that problem. I wonder if it's your internet provider is choking off like gambling websites or something.
So I also downloaded the GameBet DC app to allow me to have a flutter, as we say in England, while I'm in the District of Columbia. That is run by DC Lottery. So they got in. I don't know if there are other companies doing it within DC, but the state lottery was very quick on the uptake. So with their one, I was able to register, but then they had to verify my identity. So I had to upload a picture of my driving license.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. Serious. And I was unable to place a bet until my account had been verified. Now, that being said, once I log in on my phone or the internet, I'm all good to go. Other than the fact, like, my device or that I'm using has to be within the district boundaries.
How did you transfer money into the accounts?
I used PayPal, I think. I used PayPal for one, and I used the credit card for the other, and I now cannot remember which.
Yeah,
I think MGM. I did PayPal. I think, might be the other way around.
I didn't want to put credit card information into their data banks and run the risk of people, you know, hacking into that.
Yes.
The PayPal is more secure in the sense that it comes over and you can't then hack into their system and go.
And I can't remember which one. I think the DC one. It did have different forms. They all had Apple Pay, but I think it was the DC one that didn't. What wasn't PayPal ready, which I thought was interesting. One of them wasn't. Otherwise, I would have done PayPal all the way around.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I don't know. I guess we should talk about the functionality of the apps inside them. We can kind of do this a little bit. I don't like it. I mean, it's not great. These websites are not set up as easy to get to things. And particularly the wonderful incentivized bets. Like you go and say, oh, here's a promotion. You can do this for free. It would take like, I'd have to like dig it up to find the bet, which is probably part of their plan.
Yes.
But even so, like, it just doesn't seem to me to be very intuitive. Like, it's obviously it's got the sports on one side. You click on the sports, but like moving from plain vanilla bets on team win or team loss to prop bets on particular more difficult things on both of the apps for me, it's not great. I mean, I think the MGM one's a little better, but it's not super duper intuitive.
No, it's not.
Similarly structured sports down the left, middle section's got odds and things. Right hand side has your outstanding bet slips and the like. But there's even like, I'm looking at the MGM one. I saw a preview. There's a prop bet, which I'll talk about in a second, then a bet on a winner of the game. And the winner of the game one is another one where I had a promotion. For whatever reason, my bet slip shows the prop bet but it doesn't show the bet on the game. But then you go to the My Bets tab and it shows both of the bets. So who the heck knows what's going on here?
Well, I will say this too. I mean, and obviously, I'm going to use to throw a term out there to the uninitiated. Again, we've just talked about sort of the threshold for entering these things and how, yeah, just betting on a game is a lot easier than betting on horses. One of the things that's most interesting is how is the prevalence of the parlay, where you are attempting to combine two different games.
Yeah, you have two bets, or it's two any types of bets. You put them together. The odds are longer of you getting them both right, but it means it pays off better. I've never quite understood the teasers, which is like a parlay mixed with adjustments of lines. And it gets a little complicated, but let's just say the parlay. So one of my wagers, non-football, so I'll get this one out, is they were offering a freebie partly, we'll give you back your money if you lose on what they call a same game parlay, meaning two things happening within the same game. And so as a Chelsea fan, for tomorrow, I picked them to win. And for one of the teams, what did I pick? What the heck is it?
Just win and cover. Because I did that this week with the Arsenal. I placed two bets. I didn't make it a true parlay. I placed two bets because I lost one, but I won the other. I had Arsenal winning, and then I had the over-under on goals. Yeah. And I got but I got the winning wrong.
I effectively picked them to win and Newcastle not to score.
Yeah.
So that's actually not even that good odds. It's a plus 115, meaning that I wagered $10, so I'll win $11.45 if that happens. And that's I'm only knocking a wood, since they got their new coach Tuchel, nobody scored on them, and I'm pretty sure Newcastle's a wreck.
So I'm gonna give you a couple of comments. Like I say, you downloaded two apps within the state of Virginia. I downloaded two apps in two different states. What was interesting was that from a selection of sports, the DC Sports Betting app allows me to bet on a lot more sports than MGM. I was able to find snooker and darts back in the UK on the DC app, so that when the darts tournament comes around, I'm going to put a flutter on my favorite dart player. But
what's the company for DC?
Well, I did man through DC Lottery, and it's called Game Bet DC, and it's part of the DC Lottery system. So MGM, so
they're contracting with somebody outside. What I'm trying to figure out is that a William Hill, and therefore they have better stuff?
Maybe. But the William, but by extension, one of the things I found harder about the DC app is there's less ability to create your own bet. You basically have to take whatever parlay they're offering, at least via the phone. If I wanted to put two soccer games together, I have to hope that it's one of their featured parlays. Whereas with the BetMGM, I found that definitely through the website, I could go ahead and structure my bet to my preference. I could pick this game over here and that over and under from over there, or I could pick this game and that goal scorer. Whereas on the DC app, while there are more sports to choose from, I've got to pick what they're offering me. I did not compare the odds, because I'm still getting my way around this whole plus 100, minus 100 thing, which I'm like, ooh, this is unnecessarily confusing. As someone who grew up on horse racing, where someone was a 3-1 favorite or 7-1 or 9-1, I found that really easy to understand. So for me, it's almost like learning a new language when someone tells me, oh, your team is plus 254. So I've, in my mind, I had to figure out, oh, so that means that if I place $100, I'll win 254. But if it's minus 154, to win 100... No.
Yeah.
What is it?
To win if it's minus, you have to...
I have to place... The idea is I'm placing that number to win $100. So even right there...
You have to do that, but if reflect, you can give any number, but that's the ratio that it's explaining. So,
But for me, it's a lot easier if someone just goes, they're a 4-1 underdog, or 11-10 on. I just find that language much easier to understand.
In fact, spread bets, like anything, we think about like one team's plus 7.5 points or whatever. Yes.
I think it is in line with that.
Those not only usually you're going to end up at minus 110 each side, because the casino has to make money, the provider. So like you never are actually going to get an even bet. You're going to get you have to take 10% off. You're essentially paying to them to facilitate this, but they will tweak that. Like they'll keep the spread at the plus 7, but they'll tweak those numbers for like, oh, it's almost like adjusting in between the spread numbers. Like, yes. Okay, we're going to push people around a little bit by changing that. So for example, I'm just looking at Iowa State and Oklahoma basketball. If you pick the Oklahoma side -7.5, it's -115. If you pick the Iowa State, it's -110. Boring people to tears now who don't do gambling, but.
Well, I have
that said, like, should we poke around? I can mention a couple of prop bets that I already put in and see if you have an opinion. I'll tell you what they are before I say who they are.
No. Look, why don't we do it this way for the listener? Because what I don't want to do is actually place the bet while you're talking, because it'll just be dead air. So why don't we? I'm more than happy to roll along with whatever you're choosing. So why don't you start listing? And I'm sorry, while we're recording the show, I know you just mentioned some obscure Big Eight basketball game. Right now, as we're recording, Fulham and West Ham are playing each other in the Premier League in a London derby game. I have that on three. I have three different bets going on that basically needed that game to end in a draw of some kind. It's nearly halftime and it's 0-0, so I'm currently happy.
I'm excited.
But again, my record so far is all I seem to do is lose money, so I have no expectation this is going to end up good. But it's interesting. One of these I placed with one of the free bets that came on the app, and I have a funny feeling that depending, one of the things to just backtrack a little bit, you talked about how on the MGM app, and the MGM website, you know, they track how long you're on, and then when you click off, I do suspect that in order to encourage you to bet, they will be sending, hey, have a free dollar back to my phone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Not as a reward like in Vegas, but as a, hey, come back and open the app. Yep. We've sent you a free bet as a way to generate business.
Have you watched The Social Dilemma yet on Netflix, the documentary?
No.
Okay, well, I'll put that aside. It's basically people personifying like the internet and what it's doing to you when you're, you know, you don't spend your time looking at your Instagram or your Facebook thing and the little tricks it does because it knows everything about you. So
that's another show. Yeah, we can do that. All right, so let's have a bit of fun.
I'll go with BetMGM just because I have it open at the moment.
Okay,
I'm trying to find the wager. What it is who would score the first touchdown.
Right,
and so like these are all long odds, right?
Yeah,
and this was one of the I picked this one because it was another one where they said, okay, if you bet $20, we'll give you the money back for it. And I ended up picking the party who had the best odds, Ty Hill of the Chiefs. I think it's the Chiefs, right? The at +320. So $20 would win me $84. The player TDs. Okay, are you on the MGM site?
Hold on, it's gone dead, so I need to log in again.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll.
So, but hit me up with what the bet is.
Right. So like it's you can bet on any player to score the first touchdown.
All right. So we're going to select the first touchdown scored in the game and who's going to score.
Actually, it's for each team. I think you can do and you can pick whatever it is. So
are we going to do one for each team or one overall?
You know, maybe it's one overall.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Actually, Ty Hill's the Chiefs. I don't know why. Yeah, I did say the Chiefs, didn't I? I don't know. Hey, it doesn't matter. So he's a +320. What I was surprised by is, and I haven't followed football enough, as I thought Mahomes would be maybe a possibility, particularly in a Super Bowl. You always have that, you know, like it's a little awkward to start and maybe your quarterback scores, but he's +1200. So like, I mean, if you bet $20, you're going to clean up if he wins, if he scores. But I went ahead with the thing that seemed to have the best odds. As long as it's a free bet, I'd take the closest thing to the most likely bet. But if you get on there and you go to the player TDs, you can pick any player. This won't be a great one because it'll only match us up if one of us wins. You know, like in other words, most likely we won't get it because the odds are long that either one of our picks is going to get it.
Okay. All right. So first touchdown, that's one that we're doing. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to pick somebody now or
no? I'm going to take some time. You can't hit me with this and then have me dive in and make a pull. Remember.
All right.
I was brought up by a father who would open the newspaper and could analyze each horse in a race. I want to take a look at their time to the first turn, to their history in bad weather. I want to look at all those things and then make my selection. And I'm going to say this now. I'm being slightly throwaway when I say that. Part of the attraction for me about sports betting, compared to, say, casino games, I don't enjoy casino. I love playing cards, but I'm not a huge fan of casino games. But sports betting, I love sports betting because at some moment, I believe that I'm going to do well based on my knowledge an understanding of the game.
That's what keeps you coming
so,
back.
So now that you're – so while the bet is score of the first touchdown, I'm willing to make that bet. But I'm going to take some time and apply my knowledge and analysis before I do that. So don't try and hustle me into some. Otherwise, this is just like playing. This is just like roulette. What number are you going to put it on? That's no skill in that at all.
So the next bet, this is just a regular money line bet, meaning picking one of the teams to win. And okay. I'm taking the Buccaneers, not because I think they're going to win.
They're going to cover the spread.
Well, I'm not.
Are you doing one of these race to 20 points?
No. This is a simple bet. I'm going to explain why I'm doing this. I'm in a season-long football pool with eight people where we each have four teams and we have a total. And it comes down to I've been leading all season long. I have the Chiefs. Our friend Mike, you've met before,
yes.
Big Mike. He's he had not Detective Mike, but my friend.
No, good Dolph, friend Mike. Yep.
He's
tall,
got
more tall
the
Mike.
Buccaneers.
Oh.
And so whoever wins this game will take $320 out of the pool. So I've got this is one of these free money things, like where they offered you money to put it in. They're like matching up a money. So I put a bet on the Buccaneers to hedge that, so that even if the Buccaneers win and I don't win my $320, I'll win money on this bet. So
okay.
I kind of keep them even.
So we're going to pick
last weekend too, because it would basically, there was a way I could have lost out of the pool last weekend. So I made a pick that would have offset that if I lost out of the pool last weekend.
So we're going to pick a straight winner.
Yeah. So that one, you need more help on that one too.
Yeah. Cause I've got this awful feeling that the Buccaneers are going to win. So I'm going to take a look at the numbers first before I place my bet.
Yeah. It's plus 135, which isn't that great, but that's because the line's only 3.5.
Yes.
To be honest, everybody was expecting higher, but you know, there's one of these phenomenons in betting.
Although to be fair,
public picks.
Well, can I say something in football? Conventional wisdom always is that home field advantage is worth 3 points.
Nobody understands.
That's true. But I don't know. I don't know if this year Vegas have changed that methodology. But in an interesting enough, that in a strange way, because the Bucks are playing at home, that on a neutral field, the Chiefs are almost
they are
the touchdown
have fans
favorite.
There, but they're not going to be Buccaneers fans,
there's right? So I don't know. I don't know if Vegas changed that. So,
but so there's a phenomenon that's out there for people who don't know it already, is that these sort of public picks. In other words, so the lines are not, they're partly projections on how the game's going to come out, but the lines on the games are really about the casinos coming out even.
Yes.
Right. Like, so what they don't want to do is get overexposed one way or the other. And so they try to push bets to either side by adjusting the line. Now, when you have a pick that's a big, like, so for example, Notre Dame's a classic one that so many people are fans of Notre Dame, they tend to overbet Notre Dame.
Right.
And so like you end up with more people on that side. I'm sure Tom Brady is pushing a lot of betting towards Tampa Bay. People go, Tom Brady, 6-time Super Bowl champion, I'm betting on him. And so it's like it's inadequate. Like, they're not fully analyzing things. There's a certain amount of just people picking the one side because of that. And they may turn out to be right. It's not saying they're wrong, but it skews the line because they now have to make the line somewhere else to adjust for the, you know, 10% of people who are just making the bet based on that.
In Britain, there are two big horse races every year. The Epsom Derby in the summertime, so it's our equivalent of the Kentucky Derby, and something called the Grand National, which happens in March, which is a horse race over jumps. So these are the two big horse races of the year, and in terms of that phenomenon, the bookies always end up with someone who they call the housewife's favorite. What happens is, you know, and especially in the Grand National, where a horse, whereas in the Kentucky Derby, it's very rare. Horses don't come back the next year. Whereas in the Grand National, a horse is showing up year after year because it's over the jumps and it has a much longer lifespan. And so there was a horse when I was a kid in England called Red Rum, who won. Yeah, and he won the Grand National like 4 times. And funnily enough, his name is Murder spelt backwards, which I never realized until I was a bit older. Horse was called...
Hold on,
don't let me finish. Yeah, the horse is called Red Rum, and he won 2 times. And then by the time he was running again, he would be he would become the runaway favorite because the casual punter, the housewife in inverted commas, was just betting on the horse that she knew. So to your point, that is similar to action on Tom Brady, because people are like, oh, it's Tom Brady. So there is that phenomenon in betting that the house has to sort of guard against, is almost the unknowledgeable bet.
Yeah.
If everyone knew what they were doing, they wouldn't have to put so much thought into their line. But
when did you say you were first exposed to this name?
Back in the 70s. The horse was called...
Before or after The Shining?
Yeah, but I hadn't seen The Shining then. That was my point. Okay. And I'd never made the connection that the horse Red Rum is murder spelt backwards, which I suddenly thought... So the horse is a grand national legend with kind of a cool name, but then later on as I got older, I'm like, ooh, that's a bit nasty. Yeah. Why would you call your horse murder?
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? That's
all. My other bet is over on FanDuel, so I don't know if it's replicated for you.
Okay.
This is a more fun classic a prop bet. Is the last play of the game going to be a QB kneel?
Oh, that's a good one. I will try and find. I am sure between my two apps they will have that. So last play of the game, QB kneel. Okay.
And I said no. Which is plus 140, which I was kind of surprised. I mean, like, I get the fact that lots of games end on kneels, but a Super Bowl, people, like, it, first of all, if it's the other team that has the last possession as they're trying to score.
Oh, no, I'm glad you told me that, because I'm going the other way on that one.
Okay, you're going
to go. So that's good, yeah.
I don't have any other prop bets already. Do you have any, like, particularly if they're on the MGM side, because then we can definitely make sure they're the same.
Well, that was the issue. And this is the thing. I did find, I'd actually downloaded another article of interest that was like 10 fun bets to have on the Super Bowl. And one of them was who's going to win Puppy Bowl, which is the TV show that Nickelodeon runs.
That's not fun, because that's not sports.
Well, and that's the thing. So all of a sudden, I'm like, you know, and in surfing around this morning, I was struggling to find, like, you know, there's the classic how long is the national anthem bet, and I haven't been able to find that anywhere.
No, it's because it's not sports.
No, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
It's got to be the actual sporting part of it. Now, none of these things have the ancillary to sports stuff.
I actually liked, there was one that I thought was kind of interesting. I liked the where is it? It was to do with timeouts. Let me find it somewhere. Which team will call the first timeout?
Is this under game props?
Yes, and they were both. The odds were both exactly the same. So a lot of those bets, the numbers are exactly the same.
Coin.
Yeah. But I actually thought. I like the idea of maybe between us picking one of these parlays. So
parlay's not good to pick between two of us because there's too
many. No, you're right.
Maybe we don't want to do it here. Maybe you just email me later on two or three props you pick. It'll fill out our roster here. I'll pick, you don't have to tell me what you pick. Just tell me which bets you did, and then I'll pick my sides, and you pick your sides, and we'll see, you know, how those match up.
All right, I'll come up with three, and I'll email you later. But I'm looking at things like length of the longest drive. I'm looking at combining the money line and team scoring points. I'm looking for one of those that I think would be kind of fun.
The combined ones, the problem is, I mean, like it's the problem that I had with my player touchdown bet is that. Both of us will probably be wrong. Like what you'd like to do is pick some things where one of us, like there will be a 50-50, you know, I mean, one side or the other side, you know.
All right. So
actually, when we do this, it should be handicapped by the dollar is one, right? Like, so it shouldn't be like if the prop, like for example, my prop on the last QB kneel, it shouldn't just be you're right, I'm wrong. It should be like who earns more money on net, because if the odds are, you know, plus 140, you should get credit for taking the riskier side.
All right, so I'm going to throw you one here that's kind of interesting as well, and there's a nice variant of odds within the options. The Kansas City Chiefs, the outcome of their first drive.
Is this what categories? Is this game props?
So it's within game props on the MGM site. So Kansas City's outcome of their first drive. And again, within that, there's going to be four choices, all with different odds. You can pick a touchdown, a field goal attempt, a punt.
You're just completely not listening to my proposal here. Is that be things?
I am listening to that proposal. I agree with that proposal, but I'm also in the process of attempting to select because I want the listener to hear some of these things rather than me just emailing you later.
You had emailed beforehand that we would arrive with three or four prop bets each. I arrived with mine. You've arrived with nothing.
No, I told you to arrive with three, and then I would just bet them as well.
Well, you weren't going to arrive with any?
Yeah, I told you that in the email. I was going to allow you to. I was going to allow you to pick.
While you flounder around the website?
Yeah. Yes.
That's great. I think we need to wrap this up.
All right. All right. So we're going to have, we do have four things right now. The score of the first touchdown, who the straight winner will be, what the last play, or will the last play of the game be a quarterback kneel? And then I've also just thrown in whatever happens on Kansas City's first drive. We'll have a couple more. So by the time you hear this show, you'll know the results of those four. And then on the next time we are together recording, we'll be able to total those up and three others.
Yeah. I think, by the way, once you make a wager, you can share. Or just if there may be a way for you to link it to me. Anyway, we'll talk about that afterwards.
So, all right.
Sorry, everybody.
Yeah. So again, don't gamble. It's bad, but it will help you enjoy the show. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.